Welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Gilbert. It's my co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Doing great.
Good. It's a big weekend. I think we're going to start off just saying we're going to preview WrestleMania later. Are you excited for WrestleMania week? We're here, Dan. Brother. It's WrestleMania weekend.
I mean, I fight to survive. Pump it up. Always.
Give me the green light, because I'm ready to go. And I've been having fun watching, looking at WWE superstars doing stuff in the community.
Sure.
Those are my favorite things.
WWE cares.
Yeah. See where Enzo Amore was taught to read by a kindergarten class? That was beautiful. Goldust picking up trash. I think that was part of his community service plea, but still. Sure. Lots of fun stuff there. But speaking of people being in the community, there's news this week that got me pretty excited. And the city of Las Vegas is going to have some new people in their community in 2 years as the Raiders are moving to Las Vegas.
And the what Raiders. We think
could maybe be one of the, maybe the ultimate thrill, maybe the real ultimate thrill ride is watching what happens when a bunch of 20 something year old millionaires live in Vegas.
I almost feel like they'll be under, like, I don't know how this is going to work. That's the thing I hadn't even thought about. It's like all these football players in their 20s are going to be living in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But
I mean, stuff could get bad very quickly, or it could be really fun to just watch. It's going to make a great 30 for 30, I feel like, if everything's still around like that in like 30 years. It's something I'll be pretty interested to see.
Well, the thing
happens.
About the Raiders is they never stay any place long, like for 30 years at a time. Yeah. So like, In 20 years or so, Las Vegas, like, the Raiders will be moving to, I don't know, Boise.
Yeah. Or whatever's not taken over. Or Vegas may be a coastal town by then. Sure. So who knows, Dan? Yeah. Especially if California falls off the earth, which may be smart move on Mark Davis. Spin zone, you know. If Oakland's underwater, how are you going to play football there in 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's already underwater in some ways, but, you know, maybe literally it'll be underwater someday.
Yeah, but what are your initial thoughts on this, though? NFL, like, the biggest sports league has a team in Vegas, finally.
So, the first thought that comes to mind is that the people of, like, Las Vegas are being royally fucked over. Because, I mean, this is an insane amount of money that the city is paying out to buy. Basically, this is St. Louis all over again. You know, 20 years ago, St. Louis stole the Rams from L.A. by basically, you know, giving the Rams owner, who was an incompetent buffoon with no real money, who got the team through from her husband dying, you know, here's $200 million under the table personally to you, and here's a $400 million stadium, which at the time was a shit ton of money for a stadium.
Yeah.
We're going to build it, and you don't have to pay a dime. Come to St. Louis. And that's how the Rams, you know, ended up in St. Louis in the first place. This takes that and puts it on a whole new level. You know, but once again, we've got a guy in Mark Davis who's has no money. I mean, the Davis family weren't extremely rich. They became rich by Al Davis swindling his way into stealing the Raiders from their actual owners.
The Raiders are a weird situation, I want to point that out, where it's probably the only team where the main source of income is the NFL team. I'm sure there are other deals the Davises
there's
have,
like the
but
the Wilson family in the Bills, which is similar, like they're both AFL teams, who still had like most of their original ownership or brain trust there. I think it's just like really Mark Davis and the Bills.
Because even with the Steelers with the Mooney family, I think they're pretty well connected.
They were
independently
very wealthy, if I'm not mistaken.
And they're very politically connected, too. I think, famously, one of the Rooneys was an ambassador to Ireland under Obama.
Sure.
So these are people well-connected. These are people, blue blood, you know, kind of in there. Davis family, not so much. Yeah. Davis family
like,
would be
Al
new
Davis
money.
Was some, like, gutter street kid who, like, conned his way into owning a team. Like, literally, like, there was a lawsuit because he scammed his, like, while two of the Raiders originally had three owners. One of them was dying. The other two went on vacation out of the country. And while they were out of the country, like, Al Davis pulled some crap with the guy who was dying to get shares put in his name and where he would get everybody's shares as soon as they died instead of them being able to leave it to their children. It's very shady. Very, very shady. But that's how the Davis family ended up owning a team. Which means they are in some ways perfect for Las Vegas.
No, that's what I was about to say. Like, one of my things for this topic of, you know, the Raiders going to Vegas would be, could any other franchise make this work but the Oakland Raiders? With their history and their kind of reputation and their strong brand, it seems like to me the only team that could you could really move to Vegas and have it work that isn't named, you know, New England or Pittsburgh.
Like, the best thing about the Raiders moving to Vegas is that once it became clear they were definitely moving, because, you know, the Bay Area was not willing to, you know, Oakland was not willing to build them a new stadium. They couldn't go to San Jose because the 49ers already did. There was nowhere for them to get a stadium deal in the Bay Area. It basically was sounding like it was either going to be Portland, Vegas, or San Antonio. And San Antonio would have been the worst choice because that is the least Raiders city ever. San Antonio is a city full of people who still go to church in 2017. Yeah. That just does not work. Portland, maybe, but it's a different kind of weird than Raiders weird.
Yeah.
Vegas just seems to fit. Like, there's a cultural mix there that seems to... No. Like, the Raiders seem like the kind of place where half of the city work in the porn industry. You know, like, that's the overlap there.
Yeah. Well, I think the Portland thing would have been weird, too. I think if the Seahawks haven't been as successful as they kind of have been the past 10 years or so, then maybe Portland is a more attractive option, you know, for Mark Davis and the Raiders. But I think with Seattle's success, it's not going to be as easy to gain a fan base in Portland as maybe
ultimately, the issues in Portland is the same issues he had in the Bay Area, where you have a very liberal city that's not going to spend public money on buying a football team.
Yeah.
You know, when they have, like, schools to fund and shit. Like, Las Vegas was the kind of perfect city in the sense that Nevada's weird. It's always a very close state, like, politically. A lot of its population is young, which helps Democrats, but then they also have this massive population of very conservative Mormons who don't live in Las Vegas itself, but who live in the rest of Nevada. So, like, you end up with, like, you know... Harry Reid is their senator for 30 years, but then, like, Bush won Nevada, you know, and Trump won the primary there for the Republicans. Like, it's a weird state politically.
Well, and realistically, with Harry Reid, if he wasn't Mormon, he probably doesn't serve in the Senate there for 30 years. That probably definitely helped him.
But he was the only Democrat. He was the only Mormon Democrat in Congress for, like, 30 years. So
sorry about that, some technical issues, but we're back. We're ready. So where are we? We're talking about Nevada.
Yeah.
And it's Nevada, kind of weird political climate.
It's got this weird political climate, which of all the places on the West Coast, if you told me that one of the cities, you know, in the Pacific time zone was going to be willing to give a guy, hundreds of millions of dollars to build a stadium, I would have believed Vegas over most of them. So I think that's when you really get down to why Vegas got a team. Everybody can doll it up and say, oh, this is an emerging media market. You know, Las Vegas is a growing city. In 20 years, it might be on the same level as a Phoenix or a San Jose or whatever. Yeah. Really, the reason why Las Vegas got this team, because San Antonio's a better market. Austin would have been a better TV market. Portland would have been a better TV market. You know, staying in the Bay Area would be a better TV market. The reason why they got the team is because Vegas was willing to pay the most, which is ultimately everybody in the NFL will tell you that there's reasons for why they do things. And we're so smart in the NFL. We always make the right decisions. It's a league that first, second, third, fourth, and fifth is run by how can we make the most money?
Yeah.
And Vegas gave the guy a free stadium. That's pretty much the open and shut of it. Is this going to work? I'm not really sure of it. I think the hockey team is going to be a total failure. I don't know if I think the football team has a chance. The Raiders have a chance just because it's once a week. It's only 8 games a week. I think they can draw people coming in from, you know, Utah, which doesn't have a football team. you know, I think they can draw even, people driving
even parts
up from
of
Arizona.
New Mexico. Yeah, New Mexico. Yeah. And it's the best brand for the Raiders. It's a brand that carries over. You know, you find Raiders fans in every state. This isn't like necessarily like the Rams moving. The Raiders are one of the more popular teams in the NFL. Even if they're not very good, people.
The Rams thing's not really fair because the Rams had a much bigger fan base in L.A. Like, the issue with the Rams is that they have to try to recover from 20 years of being in St. Louis. But before they moved, the Rams were one of the best drawing teams in the league.
Okay, well, this isn't like the Bengals move. This isn't a team with a weak brand.
Yes, that's a great example. If the Bengals moved, nobody would give a shit, you know. Yeah.
Not
well,
even
like
people
the Chargers are moving to L.A., and nobody in L.A. gives a fuck.
No.
Because nobody in L.A. cared about the Chargers.
But I think you'll see more Chargers gear around in L.A. because it looks a lot cooler.
Nothing looks cooler than the Raiders stuff.
Well,
that's
That baby blue. You're going to see baby blue everywhere in L.A. once the Chargers take off. But I will
I
say,
so.
To me...
Nobody's going to give a shit about the Chargers. Nobody. because there's also that thing of... people in L.A. act like everybody in San... Like, people in L.A. treat people in San Diego like they're the fucking hicks from the... Like, as far as people in L.A. are concerned, if you're from San Diego, you might as well just say, I fuck my cousin. Like, and that's... And this is... Oh, my God. Those San Diego people are moving up here. Like, the Clippers still haven't got over the stink of being in San Diego for a few years. Like, the Clippers are still treated like shit in L.A. because they used to be in San Diego.
Yeah. But back to my kind of point to kind of close out this convo about the Las Vegas Raiders. No other team could make this work, probably. No other team realistically that would move could make this work. Let me paraphrase that. Because obviously if you move Green Bay to Las Vegas, that team's probably going to be very popular. Maybe Green Bay's a bad example. But, you know, Pittsburgh, if you move the Patriots to Vegas, there are going to be tons of fans there. Tons of Raiders fans will be in Vegas. I think it'll be a success. And you're going to sell those VIP suites like that. Because the casinos will buy them up. You pretty much have a guaranteed market for those, I feel like. That's everything I've read. It seems like the casinos will buy those because high rollers are going to want tickets. And they'll fucking get them.
At least early on.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, and they're a good team, though. That's the advantage, too. In 2 years, the Raiders might have a Super Bowl title.
That is true. The Raiders are moving. Yeah. Like, this isn't like 5 years ago when the Raiders were like the worst team in the league. Yeah. Like, the Raiders are a hot, up-and-coming team.
Yeah, and I mean, we're a team that probably would have done more damage in the playoffs if their quarterback didn't get hurt.
Right. But more importantly, their team is, like, they are the perfect kind of team if you're going to be flawed. They have no defense and an awesome offense, which means if you're not a perfect, like, obviously you want to be a winning team, first and foremost. But if you're going to be a team that has a flaw, if you're moving into a new market, you'd rather be the all offense team because at least that'll put asses in the seats.
No, and with a guy like Khalil Mack, you've got a sack master there who's going to sell jerseys, and he'll be well known, I'm sure, around the town after the season's done. So you have stars on both sides of the ball that you can kind of market to Vegas. I think it'll be a success in theory, but it's going to depend what happens in action with the players, and we won't really know what's going to happen until. They move, and we'll see how they interact in that new community.
And the reality for the Raiders, though, especially for that franchise, is they never really recovered moving to L.A. in the first place. Yeah. Like, when they moved back to Oakland, they were never embraced the way they were back in the 70s and the 60s. Because obviously they wouldn't be. It's like when your spouse cheats on you. You have a long breakup, and then you get back together. Are you going to have the same spark you did before they cheated on you?
Probably not.
So the Raiders were in a bad position in their old market. Look, they can only this might fail for the city of Vegas, and the Raiders still be in a good spot because the stadium's still there. You know, the stadium they still get the stadium, and their old situation was terrible.
Well,
so,
but I think if you're Vegas, you're probably guaranteed probably 2 to 3 Super Bowls in that stadium's lifespan, and those will
be
huge.
That's
going to be
the biggest thing about that stadium. They're going to get a national championship game in college football. They're going to get a better bowl. Like, I can guarantee you that. Like, the Las Vegas Bowl, the days of, like, the Las Vegas Bowl being, like, the Mountain West champion versus, like, the fifth best Pac-12
The days of
team,
BYU and North Texas are over, my friends.
Yeah, that's over. Like, they're going to be... that is going to be a marquee game. I wouldn't be shocked if they got like the Big 12 runner up versus, well, the Big 12 runner up goes to the Cotton
Bowl. No, I think it'll be in the playoffs right away too.
I think they'll be able to get in the playoff rotation. Yeah. I definitely do. But they will definitely be hosting the championship game sooner or later.
Yeah. And you know, there are other things besides sports. Obviously, you can put big concerts there. Vegas can be a destination. Well, my theory is
I don't think you can put big concerts in a stadium in Vegas because there's too much competition in too many theaters. Like you can go see like Garth Brooks in a MGM Grand Theater.
I'll disagree there because you recently, I believe, had Guns N' Roses go to Vegas. And it was a pretty well packed show. If you have a big act like that, whether it's Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Beyonce, these are acts that don't necessarily come to Vegas as much because they don't have the big arenas.
I don't think a stadium works for Vegas. Doesn't work for stadium shows like that for a concert because they have so many concerts in town, and the Vegas model with concerts is getting people to come for like a month. If you have all those people come once, well, then they're not coming every week. You'd rather draw 60,000 people over the course of a month because every time they come, they're gambling, than they all come one time at a stadium and then they can't even gamble in the stadium because there's going to be.
I'm going to disagree big there because in that Southwest market, there's not a ton of stadiums where, say, a major act, whether it's Beyonce or Justin Bieber, whoever the kids like.
But there's no major acts who can sell a stadium in 2017.
Well, Beyonce sells out stadiums.
There's one.
Well, Metallica sold out recently at the Georgia Dome. Guns N' Roses sold out at the Georgia Dome. And Dan, here's another thing. Forget about the weird Mormon market. There's probably some weird Mormon conviction or some crazy shit that you can put there too. There's money to be made off that stadium besides sports.
I don't think there's enough population to do stadium concerts.
Well, Vegas is a destination city. That's my thing.
But nobody's gonna. No, I don't see that working. I don't see that working.
I see people from Albuquerque and Santa Fe going to Vegas and say, "Yeah, we'll go for the weekend and see Guns N' Roses."
If they're not willing to go to Albuquerque or New Mexico, or if they're not willing to go to Vegas for the Vegas-y stuff. Like it's already the tourism capital of the country for adults. Like I don't see this ain't Charlotte where no tourists would have ever gone to Charlotte if there wasn't a football stadium and a basketball.
I don't disagree with that, but I think there's money outside of sports to be made with the stadium.
I'm not sold on that.
Attaching Vegas to something, if someone's like, "Well, I do want to go see this, but maybe my husband or boyfriend doesn't want to go see. Let's just keep using Beyonce." Well, then the husband's like, "Hell yeah, I'll go. I'll stay in Vegas. You go to your concert. You have fun." You know, Vegas, it's got that bonus thing. I think it'll do well. We'll see what happens, Dan. We got 2 years to learn.
The stadium's not even going to be close to the casinos, though. It's going to be way out by the NASCAR track.
You muted again.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. I think you said it's going to be right by the NASCAR track. But you have shuttles. There are things that kind of make this work. It's not necessarily a San Francisco 49ers situation. So I think we'll see what happens. Well, we got 2 years to know, and I'm usually right about these things, Dan. Let's be honest.
yes, you're always right about this.
I'm always right. But let's move on.
Let's move on.
Let's move on to something I know I'm going to be right about, and that's this year's Final Four. And I'm predicting it now, Dan. This will be one of the lowest rated Final Fours in years. Because if UNC doesn't win, you bet your ass no one's going to watch that game on Monday. Well, maybe 11 million.
That's why I can't go with you on that prediction. Because if Carolina makes it, well, already it's going to be one of the higher rated.
Well, if UNC loses and it's, what is it, Oregon, Gonzaga?
That's a disaster. That's the one where that would be one so bad that I'm almost willing to bet that every TV executive at CBS is like, "Are you sure we can't reseed the Final Four? Like, are you sure we can't get that Carolina South Carolina matchup and Gonzaga Oregon so that we make sure?
Are we sure we can't move maybe Kentucky to another bracket and go back in time so we can have Kentucky?" Because remember, one side of that bracket, Dan, had a Kentucky, UCLA, and UNC. All on that same side. These are all teams that draw. Clearly, the NCAA selection committee, not very good bookers. We'll talk about WrestleMania later. Probably better booked than that was.
This is the worst booked tournament since WrestleMania 4. Yeah. I mean, obviously, North Carolina doesn't make the final game. It's going to be a big, big ratings letdown. But if Carolina's in that final game, they've got one of the biggest fan bases in America. It'll drop. Well,
they'll be fine. That's the thing with having USC there. But here's my other issue, though, Dan. As a fan, I don't really – it's different for me. I don't really care about North Carolina. I know it's way bigger in your country. I mean, I've, you know, friends that are big fans of UNC, and I'll, you know, I like them. You know, it's cool to watch them, but, like, they're just not, you know, they're not must-see for me. And my other issue with this Final Four is there's not really a major player that I really want to watch in any of these games.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter in the Final Four. Because, like, people just watch it because it's like, oh, it's March Madness and it's the end. Like, they don't need star power to draw. The Final Four is the draw. And the brackets leading up to it is the draw.
But if you look I disagree that. If you look at some of the players that were in, you know, in the NCAA this year, there were some major stars and we're not getting one. I don't think we're going to have any top five draft picks in this Final Four.
I just think that's overrated, though, in what causes people to care about college.
Oh, you muted.
Oh, God damn it. God damn it. God damn it. And I even restarted my phone before we kicked off.
What does it do that? Are you using, like, a microphone, or?
God damn it, it did it again. No, my touchscreen's fucked up on my phone. Like, I don't know what's wrong with it, but, like, multiple times during the day, like, my touchscreen will just go unresponsive, and I can't do shit, and then suddenly, like, things will just start pressing on their own. So, I think I gotta go turn it in or something, something with it.
Yeah, you gotta get that insurance. We'll leave this in. I think that's... but yeah, let me jump back in then. What are we talking about? UNC...
I mean, I think the star power necessary.
Oh, yeah. We'll get back to that. Oh, yeah. All right. I'll jump back in. 61-50. All right. More technical difficulties, and that could have been the Illuminati trying to shut us down, Dan. Because sure. Illuminati wants the Final Four to do well. I don't think it will. They're clearly mad at me. But yeah, the lack of star power this year, maybe it's just me, Dan, because my most memorable Final Fours I remember were, like, maybe when Steve Blake took over, but Team Cleaves taking over. Anthony.
They weren't big stars. They didn't go on to be anything.
But I wonder, Dan, if some of this is me just being nostalgic and maybe remember these players going on these runs.
I think you've hit on something and you've misdiagnosed what you hit on. Three of the four teams are programs that are either mid-majors or historical doormats at basketball.
Yeah.
The key is not players being stars, because it's college and player, like, the players are transitioning and nobody cares.
Most of the coaches are stars,
And college basketball fans don't really care about, this guy's going to be in the top of the NBA. Like, they just don't think that way.
No, I think Kentucky fans do, but that's about it.
But, like, the programs are the draw. Like, if we had Carolina, Kentucky, Arizona, and, I don't know, Michigan.
UCLA.
That was our
Michigan,
or UCLA. Yeah. If that was our Final Four, everybody would be throwing babies in the air at CBS. Yeah. But instead, we've got one program that can draw, who might lose and then really fuck us. And then the other three are Gonzaga, who are a decent, like, they've been a decent story for the last decade and a half.
But I think it's a little late on the base. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of late on that Gonzaga story, though, in my
opinion. They missed time to push. They waited too long to do the push in wrestling terms. But, like, Gonzaga, Carolina is probably what they're rooting for. But then South Carolina, I don't think there's anybody at the University of South Carolina who knows they got a basketball team until, like, 12 minutes ago.
Well, I think if you have North Carolina, South Carolina, that's still an intriguing matchup.
I was gonna speak about that next. The other issue is that there's a scenario where we end up with two teams from the same region of the country playing each other.
Pretty much the same state as far as most Americans are concerned.
That is always a ratings disaster. That is never good. Because what you want is two teams from different parts of the country playing each other, because One, for people who don't live in either region, it makes the thing feel more national, which always helps. And two, you get that audience from the different regions being very excited. But when you look at the biggest rating disasters in a national championship game or a Super Bowl or a World Championship, the Subway Series and the World Series between the New York Mets and Yankees, total disaster. One of the biggest fandangos in Major League Baseball.
But you know what, Dan? I feel like if that World Series happened a year later, in 2001, after 9/11, would have been one of the highest rated World Series ever. You know, if you had that story. Post 9/11 in New York, I think it probably would have.
I guarantee you wouldn't have been, because the whole South went, eh, fuck this.
And but remember, we were all New Yorkers after 9/11, Dan. I think people forget that. That we were all New York.
But the reason why is because we weren't paying as much. We were making up a fake version of New York. If we actually got to see real New York, we would have all started hating them again immediately.
Yes.
But like, or the LSU Alabama national championship, which was two of the best programs in the country, two huge fan bases, two blue blood programs, and the ratings on that thing were the fucking pits. Because people went, I don't want to see two SEC teams play for the national title.
And those two teams, we watched them the first time. The game, you could argue it's fun, let's be honest. It sucked. If you don't really like football, it wasn't fun to watch. I think I'm going to disagree with you there. I think there are a few select matchups that would get people. Obviously, Duke UNC. I think if it's Ohio State Michigan in like a football national championship game, probably still good ratings.
There was a revulsion when that almost happened in 2006. Like, people were going to vomit over it.
Well, I think with the playoff scenario, it might be a little bit different if it happened.
If you played in the first round, I don't think anybody wants to see that in a national championship game. Something like that. But there is this weird history with South Carolina and North Carolina, which would be kind of... I don't know if the country would give a shit. We would care about it a lot where I am.
Yeah.
Because South Carolina left the ACC because their head coach and... athletic director at the time, Frank McGuire, former head coach at UNC, got fired after a point shaving scandal, if I'm not mistaken, which he felt was unfair for him to get fired for because he felt he didn't do anything for it. He was the guy who won UNC's first real national championship, you know, when they beat Wilt Chamberlain's Kansas team. He felt like he should have been head coach for life and athletic director. Felt like Carolina fucked him. Ended up at South Carolina as their head coach and AD, and within a few years agitated and led South Carolina in leaving the ACC and going independent, which was a total disaster for the South Carolina Athletic Department. They went from the peak of their football program was in the 60s, right before they left. That's when they won their first and only conference championship. When they left, their football team cratered because... I mean, life was very difficult for a Southern independent. It was, you know, Florida State in those days and Miami were playing, you know, when they became programs, they were playing the most hellacious schedules ever conceived, and they survived it. South Carolina had to play those same kind of hellacious schedules, and they didn't. And they became, you know, a four-win team. Became this pathetic program, and then luck of all luck, Florida State turned down the SEC invite in 91. SEC won a 12 teams, and South Carolina got asked, even though they really brought nothing to the table. They were the Rutgers of 1991, realignment. And here they are, 20 years later. It's all paid off for South Carolina fans and for South Carolina program. Their basketball team has eventually become good. Their football team eventually became good. Their baseball team eventually became great. And that's the story of South Carolina rising from the ashes of a terrible decision to leave the ACC, playing the program that they left the ACC over. That will be a local story here. I don't know how nationally that will work.
And I think that's kind of the one I'm rooting for too, Dan, because I kind of want to see SEC-ACC too. I think that's a really fun rivalry if you're a Southern sports fan right now. And the SEC is better basketball than ACC now. So,
we'll wait for y'all to actually start winning some titles before y'all get to say that.
I guess Kentucky and Florida don't count.
When one program wins all your championships, you know what that makes you? That makes you the Pac-12.
I'm just saying two. People forget that.
Florida hasn't been worth a fuck in like a decade.
They were just in the Elite Eight or Sweet 16 or whatever the hell.
Lucky Ryan.
But yeah, we're in this weird world now where game show host is president, ACC is good at football, and SEC is good at basketball. So that's the world we live in now, Dan. It's raining cats, you know, cats are marrying dogs, it's crazy.
We live in the zone now.
Yeah.
And this is what our zone is.
And just to mention something on Oregon, I don't know who plays for Oregon.
I don't know a single person on that team.
Dorsey, something. Yeah, I like their uniforms. Go Oregon.
Didn't they used to have like Dan Dickow or something?
Yeah, they had Dan Dickow.
Who was the guy who was the backup point guard for Chicago for like 12 decades? He was Derrick Rose's backup.
Not Kirk Heinrich.
Yeah, Kirk Heinrich. Didn't he go to Oregon?
No, he was Kansas. He won a national championship in Kansas. Yeah. Same basketball history. But you know, Dan, Oregon wears the color green. And I've got the green light for WrestleMania.
And red makes green. Red turns red.
Red light. Green light. WrestleMania, we're not doing numbers. It's WrestleMania Sun this year, I believe. Last year was WrestleMania Star. Before that was WrestleMania Play Button. This year, WrestleMania Sun. Pretty excited. I went to the last one in Orlando. I'm not going this year, but it's a fun time, and that's a great host city for WrestleMania. It's probably one of the better cities.
Realistically, they should go to Orlando like every three. Like, really, realistically, the rotation should just be like New Orleans, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta, Orlando, and then New Jersey. And they should
and
just
then, like,
that.
Vegas every couple of years. Because Vegas will
Vegas is
going to
be... Yeah, that's going to be great when they do Vegas WrestleMania. Yeah. That's going
to
be awesome.
So like, but somewhere warm. Like, oh, people are always like, oh, WrestleMania should be in Minnesota. And it's like, I don't want to go to fucking Minnesota.
Okay, that's
Minnesota.
Psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only people who say that are people who've never been to Minnesota.
Or live in Minnesota, and they don't know what kind of hell they live in.
The only cold weather city that should be allowed to have a WrestleMania is the New York market. Because it's WrestleMania in New York.
But it is WrestleMania weekend. Before we get to the card, Dan, I want to kind of talk about everything that's going on this weekend. Because WrestleMania has gone from just a weekend with a show you're really excited about to a whole... You got to take off work, basically, to kind of take in everything. And everything kind of kicked off today, I believe, with Evolve doing a show, and you have all these other kind of wacky independent shows going on. Sure. You want to kind of talk about some of those real quick before we get to the WWE stuff?
Look, I'm never going to be the guy who you turn to for the hot indie takes. I'm no Frey. I don't make towns. I don't believe in what they do.
Yes. But you follow these people on Twitter, Dan, and I don't.
Yeah. I didn't follow Continental Wrestling tapes when I don't watch that trash. But I will say the show I'm looking forward to more than any this week is Joey Janela's Spring Break, because Glacier is going to be in a battle royal. So okay, Glacier, the greatest pro wrestler of all time.
Yeah, greatest ever.
Joey Janela is going to wrestle Marty Jannetty, which I think is going to be a seven-star classic.
Who is Joey Janela? He's kind of like a outsider bad boy figure in wrestling. He just kind of gets over by being entertaining on social media.
Yeah, I feel like I've never heard anybody say a good word about his ring work, but he has cultivated a social media following. So
no.
He's a good brother. I guess, by, you know, in managing to do that. He's, I mean, in the same way that Doc Gallows has managed to make a career for himself by being funny on podcasts and YouTube, even though I still think we're waiting for the first decent Doc Gallows match. But, you know, Joey Janela has his social media thing, and he's been wanting to wrestle Marty Jannetty for like 4 years, and he's finally going to wrestle Marty Jannetty. Damn it.
Yeah.
Fanny pack.
So I believe that'll all be available
on
a poll. Yeah. It's all available on iPay-per-view streaming at different services.
It's going to be on. It's going to be on FlowSlam. So
FlowSlam.
I mean, I'm getting FlowSlam.
Yeah.
I'm getting FlowSlam this month just to do that. And
I'm going to steal it.
And the big main event of the Joey Janela Spring Break show, though, is going to be Dan Severn versus everybody's favorite, the cute boy whose name I just forgot.
Matt Riddle.
Matt Riddle, the one everybody
the stoner.
Wants in WWE.
The MMA stoner.
I almost just called him Stoner Terry Von Erich, but then I remembered, Terry Von Erich was no stranger to drugs. So.
Yeah. But yeah, let's. So that's some. There's some other independent stuff, but I kind of want us to focus on the WWE. So this is the stuff most people will be watching and caring about, sure. I would assume. And the first thing Friday it kicks off Hall of Fame. The big guy, I think the big name this year, Kurt Angle, headlining. But also some other guys you probably heard of, like DDP, The Rock and Roll Express, Rick Rude. I'm sure Beth Phoenix. But sadly, this year no celebrity inductee. And you think that's because the WWE is trying to kind of distance themselves from Trump, and Trump would be brought up probably if it was a celebrity.
Yeah, that's probably kind of a smart move.
Yeah.
Also, the Eric LeGrand is going in, or yeah. I may have said his name wrong, but he's going in as the Warrior Award.
Yeah, I keep getting him confused with Eric Garland on Twitter.
It throws me off.
Throws me off every time. My brain's like, oh yeah. But he's getting the Warrior Award, and Warrior famously didn't like crippled people, or gay people.
Famously, or really anyone who wasn't people.
Yeah.
And blacks, so, and gays.
Yeah.
And fat people. But
yeah.
I just thought of, like, the perfect Eric Garland tweet was, in all caps, I would be willing to give up the use of my legs to save my family from Russia. Come to me. I don't know why, and I just turned him into a Warrior promo style too.
That's combining the brands there. That's good synergy there, Dan. My favorite Eric Garland tweet was the one about epic rap battles being a gift to history from our genre, sure. Something like that. Oh Jesus Christ! But yeah, Hall of Fame. It's gonna be fun. I don't really know what to preview with it, but it's gonna be a fun night. It's fun speeches, and if you're a wrestling fan. There's nothing better, and if you're not a big wrestling fan, watching wrestlers give speeches, super fun. These are some of the most charismatic people in the world, and they're getting to talk with an open mic.
Who's inducting really Rick Rude?
You know? I don't know. Kurt Hennig. Oh,
Kurt Hennig's dead, brother.
I know. Larry, I have no idea actually.
I hope it's Nash. Like, let's get Nash on this show.
Who's the guy Rick Rude hated? Who's one of those people? Oh, Sting.
Hogan.
Sting.
No, he likes Sting. I mean, they worked together.
No, remember Sting broke his neck. Yeah, he hated him.
He blamed Sting for crippling him. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, but it's gonna be fun, you know. I'm really hyped to watch this. But what's been nice in recent years, though, Dan, with the Hall of Fame, it seems like the fans are being like way more respectful now to the wrestlers than say they were, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Is that fair to say? I mean, I know the celebrity inductee always gets booed. But that's kind of a tradition.
I mean, it is a wrestling show at the end of the day. I don't know. I mean, it's like these guys, especially these are all old guys who remember when the wrestling fans all tried to stab them. Like they're not as precious about the way the fans react as some of the younger wrestlers.
I don't like when the fans do chants to amuse themselves, because Hall of Fame is a more formal event. And yeah, you can have fun, but don't yell when a guy's giving a speech. It's just rude.
I thought the fans were very respectful to Mr. T, considering.
Yes,
he went on
a little
like
too
hour.
Respectful, but my boy Drew Carey gets booed off stage. So,
sure.
But let's move on. Saturday, the NXT takeover from Orlando, and what feels like the least anticipated takeover, maybe ever. I guess maybe the one in Toronto, no one really cared about, but this one seems like I'm kind of hyped for the. I think the tag team triple threat match looks fun and. Bobby Roode's entrance will be really cool, but
I think it's the first big takeover where there's not a match that you're really looking forward to.
Yeah.
Because, like, you got, like, you got an 8-person mixed gender match. Who's going to give a shit about that?
Yeah.
You know, it's got No Way Jose in it. I mean, and it's got Eric Young in it. So there's no, like, clinically, that cannot get anyone excited. That can be prescribed to stop erections. Like, you put No Way Jose and Eric Young in front of people. And then you got, you know, Cien Almas versus Aleister Black. And, like, I mean, Cien Almas hasn't been getting... I mean, that guy's still being sadness.
I think that match should kind of be the one... Maybe the one NXT match where maybe everyone walks away like, oh, that was way better than I expected. That was a lot of fun. And I think crowd will make this event more than anything.
I just have a hard time watching Cien Almas and not feeling sad that he's not still in Mexico being like an actual big star instead of.
I'm happy. Well, he's probably happy to be out of Mexico, Dan.
I doubt that. He seems miserable a lot of times.
Well, he's not going to be able to get back anytime soon because of the wall. So you better Better get a ladder.
And then, like, you know, you've got DIY and you got the Revival, and they're, like, the best two tag teams in the fucking whole company.
Yeah, and you get the big, fat boys.
Maybe not the world, and they got to fucking lug the big fat, the big fatties who can't do shit.
I'm excited about the big fatties in that match, though, because they're kind of perfect for a triple threat, where they can come in, do some power spots, then roll out and let the good guys do shit. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun, actually. Those two tag teams are good enough to carry those two guys. And WWE's format for triple threats are always really fun. WWE does one match perfect, and it's a triple threat. Probably better than any other company.
It would be more exciting to just have the Revival versus DIY again. It's almost like when Starrcade put the Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll Express and did it in a Skywalker match, where it's like, well, these two guys would be way better off if you just let them do a match. You've added something to it that made it worse. You know, Asuka and Ember Moon. I don't know if Ember Moon's is over as some of the other women who they've had, and Asuka's in this weird place where everybody just sort of looks at her as she's like so far above all the other NXT women. Like,
I think everyone's kind of waiting for her to show up on SmackDown this Tuesday.
Yeah, Asuka's problem is that she's so far above the other women that the other women can't really get over, because it's just like nobody is even seen as even willing to. Like, the NXT fans don't even think anybody else on the roster is fit to breathe the same air as Asuka.
No, she's done such a tremendous job, especially for someone who's not the best English speaker, but can get herself over just being kind of weird.
And
unique.
People
you
just
really,
buy
yeah.
her as a fucking badass that nobody else on that roster, people don't buy anybody else on that roster. Like, if Asuka and Charlotte down the road could be a big fucking match.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people would buy that as like, oh, Charlotte, she's big old tall athletic girl. She could give Asuka a run for her money. I don't think they'd buy Asuka versus anybody else on the NXT roster.
No.
And then you close it out with Rude versus Nakamura, and like Bobby Roode's just not like Bobby Roode is a guy. I don't think he's ever had a match better than 4 stars, and that's good. Like, he's good. But in the famous words of Alan Forel, I don't really give a shit if he's a good brother who has a good... I remember Alan Forel losing his mind about Bobby Roode once. And he's like, I don't give a damn if he's a good, safe brother who always has a good, safe brother match, and he's always a dream to work with, because it's always boring.
He's like a poor man's Triple H. I've always looked at kind of Bobby Roode that way. But I think the entrance will be... Both guys are going to have cool entrances, and... It'll be fun. I think it'll be a fine main event.
And Nakamura is also at that point where it's like, all right, I'm sick of being here. Like, this time last year when he had the match with Sami Zayn, it's like, all right, this is my first big match in America. I'm gonna fucking go have a big ass Nakamura match. And it feels like the last few months it's just like, all right, I'm over this.
Yeah, but let's jump to Sunday, and WrestleMania kicks off at what 10 a.m. It's a 12-hour show or whatever this ridiculousness is. Not even sure what time the pre-show even starts necessarily, Dan. Like 3 or something crazy like that?
Like, the psycho thing is that I'm going to have to watch it later in the evening, like at like 2 in the morning, time shifted. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to have to go to bed at like 3 a.m. Saturday and sleep for 13 hours in order to make this all work.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts, but let's kind of start with our preview. I'm going to kind of start, we're not really sure the order. We know I think we know the Battle Royal will probably be on the pre-show. It looks like the SmackDown's women's match got moved tonight, because I think they want to do the glow stick thing after the sun goes down with Naomi. But let's start with the Andre the Giant Battle Royal that no one really cares about. But something fun kind of happens every year in that match, right? Like, last year there was Shaq. You had Cesaro pick up the Big Show at WrestleMania 30. We talked about that in our review. Anything you're maybe looking forward to in this Battle Royale?
I'm always excited to see who wins, because usually whoever wins gets a little push coming out of Mania.
Yeah. And some legends show up. It's a fun time to pop the crowd. I think it's a perfect opening match. We're like, DDP.
Every big match should open with a Battle Royal. Every big show should open with a Battle Royal.
And that's something WWE used to do. That used to be a thing, I believe, was you'd start a house show card with the Battle Royal. Kind of get the people going.
New Japan always does it for the Tokyo Dome. They always have the Rumbo.
Yes. But that'll be fun, but it'll be whatever. I think that Big Show and the the big match on the pre-show is going to be the Cruiserweight match. Neville versus Austin Aries. I'm really excited about this, and I don't really care about WWE Cruiserweights, but this match could be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why the WWE Cruiserweight division has kind of been a dud is because for whatever reason they pushed guys who weren't very good out of the gate. I don't know why they thought Brian Kendrick would be the hero of their division, but fuck, nobody's given a shit about Brian Kendrick in like 15 years.
Yeah.
But no, eventually they figured Brian Kendrick, out.
Yeah. Even when he's in WWE, no one really cared until he, you know, tagged with Paul London famously.
Yeah, and even then it was like Paul London carrying him. Yeah, I said it. But eventually they figured out, oh, like, Neville's our best cruiserweight and Austin Aries is our second best. Like, we should just, like, put them together. Like,
yeah, and I think they're pushing, was it Mustafa Ali now, who looks to be kind of be getting over. So there's kind of hope for the cruiserweight division, but it's going to take some more time. This could be the match show that maybe turns it around in everyone's eyes. I think there might be a little pressure on Neville and Aries to really go out there and maybe not steal the show, but kind of, you know, have a really fun match here.
It depends on if Arn Anderson gets a hold of them and ruins their match by saying, all right, chin locks.
Work the leg.
Work that leg. I think the biggest thing for the Cruiserweights, though, is that 205 Live show's got to go.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to, like, they can't keep, like, I think that's why there's so little heat on the Cruiserweights is because their main show that they get, you know, that's supposed to build buzz around them is always in front of these dead SmackDown crowds that, you know, full of people.
No, I don't get why that show isn't pre-taped maybe even before SmackDown.
I don't get why they don't just do it at the Performance Center, like, once a week. Yeah. Like, who gives a shit? Or just, like, tape 7 of them in a row and then air them and then produce the shit out of them like they did the Cruiserweight Classic in the first place.
Exactly.
Just fucking, you know, tape like 9 of them in a row, produce them, make them look cool, do them in front of a hot crowd, and then these guys will look like stars, even though, you know, you can fucking trick people into thinking they're stars. But you put them on in front of SmackDown crowds that don't give a shit, that want to go home, and yeah, people are going to treat them like they're bullshits.
And I'm going to just assume this match should probably be moved to the pre-show if they're going to do the SmackDown women's match later. Dean Ambrose, Baron Corbin, and what should be a forklift match, but sadly isn't.
I don't think they'll put either one of those guys on a pre-show. Like, I know you and me talked in the in our pre-show that the WWE, like, the pre-show thing is all a lie. But I think they think Corbin is somebody, even though he absolutely isn't. But, you know, they're kind of dumb and have no eye for talent, so that's the way it goes.
So do you think they'll move them maybe that ladder match to the pre-show? That seems like a good opening match thing, is my thing. And I feel like if Ambrose and Corbin are on the main card, where are you going to really put them where they're not going to have a dead crowd? Because even the women's match should have some heat, because there are some bigger stars and good workers in that match. Maybe not good workers, but workers who do fun spots.
You could always move the tag team match to the pre-show, and no, I don't think anybody would care.
Yeah, I think we'll probably see that ladder. I think the ladder match in the pre-show should be pretty fun, actually. I don't think it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be anything like from WrestleMania 2000 or, you know, TLC 2, but it should be pretty fun. These are pretty fun workers, and it's going to be probably a safe ladder match with a few crazy spots. I'd say like 3 stars be my expectation.
I don't think that match is going to be safe, because you got Enzo who's going to fucking kill himself because he can't work, and this is his big moment.
Yeah.
And Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson haven't been going anywhere. They might do some crazy shit to try to, like, hey, people did love us once. Like, we used to have buzz. So,
Let's move on to what I think will be, these matches for sure will be on the main card. Our first one, Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens. A month ago, if you told me that this feud kind of felt like it was not that fun, I would have slapped you in the face, but it kind of seems like it's lost a lot of steam.
Yeah. And it's a Chris Jericho match, you know, in 2017, so how good can it really be? Yeah,
this is a match that's going to need a lot of heat, you know, a lot of crowd reaction to make this match really worth it. I don't know if they'll get it, but it'll be fine. I think Owens will try to have a good match at the very
least. It also feels kind of, the thing that kind of leaves me hollow about it is it feels kind of derivative of other Jericho feuds with, like, it feels like Jericho is now in, like, the Shawn Michaels role from the original Jericho-Shawn Michaels feud, where the whole thing was built around Jericho grew up a huge fan of Shawn Michaels, but now he hates him. And they're doing that same thing with him and Owens. And I mean, and maybe if you're a young fan, you didn't even see the first Shawn Michaels Jericho match, so you don't even know.
But you know any better? Yeah.
For me, it's like it feels kind of like I've seen you do. I've seen this thing, Jericho. I've seen you tell this story before, brother.
Yeah. Next up, Bayley, Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks, Nia Jax, Fatal 4-Way Elimination Match. She's just gonna make it even longer for the Raw Women's Title. I think this one could be pretty fun. I don't know if it'll kind of.
I think it'll be maybe, great. I think. Yeah. I think when they made it an elimination match, it was like, this is going to be a kick-ass match.
Yeah.
Because
I think it'll be fun. Yeah.
It'll be. I think they'll basically follow the psychology of the famous Four Corners match from WrestleMania 2000, where like Big Show like had all those big spots early in the match, looking like a big old tough guy, but then they all ganged up on him and got him out of the match pretty quick in, so that the rest of them could like, all right, now the three of us who are actual stars can like,
and then and you'll probably see the Sasha Banks kind of. I'd imagine she'll turn on Bayley or attack her. But I don't think it'll be as fun as the women's match from last year. I really enjoyed that. Maybe it's just the spot it was in the show where you just needed something fun. But I don't know if it'll be as good as that one. But I think it'll be fun. Maybe not a show. If anything could steal the show, though, probably this match would be like maybe my number one here.
I think it'll end up being a better match and get less acclaim.
Mm.
Because I think the reason why that match did so well in people's imagination last year is because the rest of that show was so fucking terrible.
Yeah.
That it was like, man, the women actually had the best match on the show. Fuck, they fucking did it. Because the rest of that card was like the dirt worst.
Yeah.
And I think there's other stuff that could maybe top it this year.
Well, speaking of something that may top it, I have a proposal for you here, Dan. John Cena, Nikki Bella versus The Miz and Maryse. And what people are calling the John Cena proposal match, where John Cena will probably propose to Nikki Bella after the match.
This
feud's been really fun, and The Miz is just awesome right now.
This is a great feud that's going to have a drizzling shits match.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, that used to be a thing at WrestleMania all the time.
Yeah.
Like every year at WrestleMania, they'd have a match that had a really hot build that, you know, that really was great TV, and then the match, you get the match, and it was like the fucking worst thing you ever saw.
Jake Roberts, Honky Tonk Man.
Jake Roberts had two matches like this. Jake Roberts versus Ricky Martel was like the worst match I've ever seen two good workers have. But the fucking build-up to that's one of the greatest builds they ever did for anything.
Yeah.
And I think, John's, like, I know if any of the Miz fans hear this, they're going to be mad at me. And I'm not saying the Miz isn't good, and I'm not saying he hasn't had a great year, and I'm not saying all those TV segments weren't great. But fuck, Nikki Bella and Maryse are in this. Maryse was one of the worst professional wrestlers in the history of the medium when she was a regular in-ring performer.
Yeah, and Nikki Bella is serviceable. Well, she's serviceable, but not someone who's going to carry somebody.
Nikki Bella is a mediocre wrestler.
Yeah.
And the women's division, surprise, surprise, the fucking Nikki Bella freaks out there who just love Nikki Bella. The minute you got Nikki Bella out of that women's scene, it went up 170%.
I think the SmackDown women's scene, but I think the SmackDown women's scene's been pretty fun.
But the SmackDown women's scene is not Nikki Bella and a bunch of other women like it was. Like when they first did the Women's Revolution, and it was like, okay, here's three new girls for you to watch. And then
when they made it Gang Wars for some reason.
Yes.
But let's move on to what probably will be maybe the match of the night, because there'll be something dumb done in this match. Shane McMahon, AJ Styles, and you know what? I just want to say, for all you AJ Styles fans, you should be very happy he's in this match, because he's going to get a much bigger payday than he probably would if he wrestled anybody else. Because this will be considered more of a feature match than, say, if he faced Nakamura or something.
Personally, I don't give a shit what guys get paid. I'd rather.
Well, I like AJ. He's a flat earther, you know.
I mean, yeah, he fucking believes in fluoride being poisonous. I'm now AJ Styles is one of those guys where I've now like muted any discussion of him anywhere, because I do not want to hear his ideas. Because every time I hear more about his personal life and his personal, I hate him. I start hating him, and I don't want.
It kind of makes me like him more. I think this match will be fun, though. I think AJ Styles can. He's on such a roll. He can have a good match with anybody.
I don't think Shane will do something dumb. I don't think anybody. I don't think anybody can get a good match out of Shane McMahon.
Shane McMahon will do something dumb.
The hope is that he does a stunt big enough to like, well, that's all you remember.
Yeah. Well, maybe jump off that roller coaster.
Have you seen the bunk bed ring set?
Yes. Ooh, yeah.
Like, they might go up there. Who knows?
But next, Triple H, Seth Rollins, non-sanctioned. This should probably be pretty fun. These are two gamers. Triple H usually has a pretty good match when he's wrestling a good worker. When he wrestles a good worker at WrestleMania. When he wrestles a good worker.
Name Undertaker. All those great Triple H main event. Name all the Triple H WrestleMania matches that are good.
Where they've been good? Every Undertaker match. Daniel Bryan. The Chris Benoit. I mean, redacted Shawn Michaels match. That's kind of it. There's only good workers he's faced. And I don't count the Jericho one because Triple H was like roided out and couldn't move. But when he's in there with a good worker, you can have a good match. Rollins is pretty good. I think it'll be fun.
The Randy Orton Triple H match is still the worst WrestleMania main
event.
No,
Randy Orton's not a good worker.
It was the second worst. And then him and Roman Reigns managed to fuck that to be worse than that match, which I didn't think was possible.
Well, it might be worse this year because I do have a prediction about what closes the show, but we'll get to that. Undertaker.
I will say in Triple, like, Seth Rollins is the kind of guy he has his best matches with because it's a bump machine who's really athletic, who can run around him and create movement. Because Triple H has horrible cardio and his legs don't really work all that well anymore. He can't athletically do what he used to do, and he needs a guy to bump around him. So Seth Rollins might be able to make this match good. But
let's move.
If they try to have like the 35-minute Triple H, I'm a great worker, let me go out there and show him how it's done, it will stink.
Well, I don't think they will because there are 87 matches on this show. Next, Roman Reigns, The Undertaker. I don't really care about this one. Undertaker looked really sad on Monday. It's like it's probably time to take a gun, take him out back, and just blow the Undertaker's head off.
When they ended the streak, that was the end of Undertaker. He hasn't done anything since they took the streak away.
I don't have a lot of thoughts on this one, Dan, to be honest. I mean, I'll watch it. Cigarette break match.
It's going to be a bad match. When Roman Reigns is the best guy in the ring, the match is almost never good.
Yeah. And that's not a knock on Roman. He's a perfectly servant. Like, he's not as bad as, like, Kevin Nash, you know?
He's Lex Luger.
Well, yeah. I think that's a better Lex Luger. Because he can move. He moves better. So, yeah.
Well, Lex Luger moved really well in the 80s.
Before I was born. I don't know that, Dan.
Well, and he was also good when he came back to WCW in the mid-90s. Yeah. But then by the end of the 90s into like 2000, when he was completely immobile and he was like having a contest with Scott Steiner for who could look more grotesque, like, yeah, that Lex Luger couldn't.
But weirdly, that's when him as the performer was so much better to me, because Luger's heel run in late 99 is one of my favorite, just for some of his facials sometimes.
Rewatch the first like 3 months of Nitro.
Oh, I did. I love it. He's so great.
That is the peak of Lex Luger's career.
Like, there's one 2000 Nitro where I think Nash makes a line about Luger being on Viagra, and Luger's reaction is the funniest fucking thing I've probably ever seen in wrestling. Just perfect. Luger had it. It was just, you know, he never could really put it together.
He's lazy. I mean, ultimately, he's lazy.
Yeah, let's move on. The Aryan Monster Brock Lesnar versus the Hebrew Hammer Bill Goldberg for the WWE Universal title.
I think this match not to be a disaster.
Yeah, I think this match, I can go ahead and tell you the spots. Goldberg, spear, jackhammer, Brock Lesnar kicks out, F5, match over. Probably four moves.
They can't do that. They won't.
That's what it'll be.
I think they're going to go 15.
Mm.
I think they're going to go 15 and there's going to be blood.
We'll see. I mean, if they kind of go stiff and just punch each other, I'm all for that. They kind of go Japanese on us, I'll be for that. Like some like mid... odds New Japan fake shoot shit. Yeah.
Or they just like go, they should basically just go for like Vader versus Hansen, the famous like eye, the fucking broken orbital.
Someone's eye should, should pop out of their socket mid match, and this will be fun.
I mean, and this was a thing, friend of the show, at Boss Maz brought up that I hadn't thought about, and it's like, how the fuck is Goldberg gonna walk down that ramp and not be dead by the time he gets to the ring?
Yeah.
Like, are they going to put him on the Segway?
Yeah, because they can't do the cart gimmick like at the Rumble because he'll be on camera the whole time. But I think the atmosphere of that should be fun, though. Like, maybe it's just me being nostalgic, but it's Bill fucking Goldberg.
I hope.
The greatest Jewish athlete of our time, Dan. People forget that.
What about Sean Green?
Why the greatest Sean. I remember Sean Green winning the world title.
I mean, Sean Green led the league in home runs 1 year.
Hmm. Goldberg was undefeated, so much better
Sean,
athlete.
And Sean Green Sean Green refused to play on Yom Kippur.
Goldberg refused to wrestle in Fall Brawl, so very similar. Let's move on. I think this match will close the show, actually, Dan, because I think that Goldberg-Brock match will be short, and because Vince McMahon's really dumb, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, for the WWE World Heavyweight title, this one's going to suck. This one's going to be like...
That match has opening of the main show written all over it.
Vince is so dumb. I can be like, well, we'll close the Orton. God damn it.
It's the SmackDown World title. It's going to go on first.
A SmackDown World title's gone on last before, though. So
when? Since when? Like 2004?
2003?
Yeah. Like, when they, like, it wasn't too long before, like, the SmackDown World title was basically, like, the Intercontinental title match.
Yeah.
Like,
I disagree. SmackDown World, last time they were in Orlando, oddly enough. SmackDown World title went on last. Undertaker Edge.
Yeah, well, that was Undertaker and Edge.
This is Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt.
I
will say, but you will have to do Bray Wyatt after it gets dark. So he will be, this will probably be, to me, I think, one of the last three matches, just because of the entrance.
Maybe, but I mean, maybe. But I don't, I think also that it'll be bad for them if they have to go on later. I think if those two guys,
this is
going to
not, it's not going
to
be good regardless. But my kind of thoughts going into the show, I don't think there's anything, it's not going to blow my mind, but it's a spectacle, and it's always fun to watch WrestleMania.
I will say, the expectations for this show are so low, it might end up being great, because all it's going to take, like, listen to all the matches we listed off and went, oh, that's going to be bad, oh, that's not going to be good. Yeah. Undertaker and Roman Reigns, if Undertaker can physically do anything, people are going to lose their goddamn mind.
No, if he can kind of pull what he did with Batista, oddly enough, I think 10 years ago, so probably not. Yeah, they could maybe steal the show, because Batista and Undertaker did.
If Undertaker can at least be as good as he was with Triple H, when he still wasn't, I mean, he had declined a lot by those matches, because those matches needed a lot of happy horse shit for them to get through it. Like, those were like the fucking Sean doing fucking acting like, I love you, man, but I'm going to kick you anyway. And they're in a cell, and there's fucking 15 fucking
There are fireworks, spots. And Michael Bay directed it. Yeah, just a big, you know, gimmicks galore.
Like, I mean, if they can get through, if they can use all the tricks to get through that thing, and Undertaker has anything in the tank, I think they could exceed people's low expectation.
Yeah. And I think it'll be pretty fun.
If Shane McMahon can do anything, people are going to lose their goddamn minds, because people are expecting that match to be the drizzling shits.
Yeah. And Pitbull, Dan. How can we forget? Pitbull and Flo Rida will be performing. And
favorites.
Yeah, and you know what? People can get mad about that. I don't really give a shit. Who cares?
It's WrestleMania. I think the fans will like it. It's a 17-hour show. Yeah, I'm going to fucking need a piss break.
Samoa Joe can't get a match that no one's going to care about. Like... You know,
I don't understand why wrestling fans are so obsessed with the idea. Like, well, why can't they throw Finn Balor and Samoa Joe together? It's like, so a match with less than a month worth of build is going to go on WrestleMania. They'll get, you know, if they had that match, it would get 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, 5-10 minutes, and no one would care. It'd go on like on a free show, and they just look
because
like dorks.
Because literally everybody else on that show was there all year being involved in shit. And, like, all the rest of the matches have had months' worth of build to them. If you have a match that was thrown together 3 weeks before the show, it's not going to get any time.
But, Dan, with this show, kind of my final thoughts, I'm just really excited. It's WrestleMania. You know, how can you not be excited? If you're a wrestling fan, even if you're just a guy who, you know, doesn't watch wrestling that often, can't really be just, if you watch wrestling 1 week out of the year, this is the week. Because the spectacle is amazing, you know? And as a guy who's been to two WrestleManias, it's just so much fun in person. You know, to be around that many people with that kind of energy is just, it's right up there to me with going to Sanford Stadium or anything like that in college football. It's one of the best sports experiences in the world.
And the other thing, WrestleMania, I know they're all stadium shows now, but if WrestleMania is going to be outdoors, it has to be on the East Coast so it'll get dark. Because the Santa Clara WrestleMania was the worst. Because it was like goddamn sunny outside the whole night. Yeah. And none of the shit, like all of the shit seemed fucked up.
Yeah, and that show was on the pace to be really bad. And then, you know, you had the Seth Rollins thing. And it was like, oh, this show is really fun, actually. That's probably the one I would compare this. I'd compare that to WrestleMania play button the most. This year's to that one. Where it's like if two or three things happen, you might think this is one of the best shows ever after you watch it.
And shit, the way wrestling fans are, if Undertaker beats Roman Reigns, everybody's going to think it was the best show ever.
The best ever. But yeah, that's kind of it for my thoughts. Running a little late, Dan, so anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
I'm good.
All right. Quick fuck you of the week. Fuck you, Penn State. You know why. Look it up.
It's Penn State. You know some fuckhead said something.
We'll get into it maybe at a later date, but just look it up. It just pisses you off, these people.
They're scared.
So fuck you, Penn State. Yeah. I think the reigning fuck you champion, Penn State. So. And you know what? Fuck you, Eric Garland. You're a dork. So.
Stop typing in all caps on Twitter, you fucking idiot.
All right,
it's like he thinks all caps will protect him from the Russians.
Yeah.
Like a fucking tinfoil hat. But anyway, if that's it for you, then there's only one person who can end this show for us and lead us into WrestleMania.
That's Pitbull.
That's the man who Pitbull fears Owenson. Play the music, Jason.